bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 55 for May 21st, 2006. We are gathered here, ladies and gentlemen, to discuss the week's news in technology and, once again, another fantastic TWiT panel. Steve Gibson hasn't been with us in so long. I thought I'd bring him on, especially since there's some security things to talk about.
Hey, Leo.
Hi, yeah. Steve. Welcome
back.
Glad
to be joining you guys.
Our good friend Robert Herron is here because he had promised to give us a review of some high-def DVD players, and we thought we'd get him on to talk about that.
Hey, pleasure.
Welcome back, Robert, from DLTV.
Thank you.
And from Great Britain... Although he can't seem to make up his mind whether he's from England, the UK, or Great Britain. All three, actually. Will Harris.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
Good to have you from bit-tech.net. And, of course, the linchpin of the TWiT scene, Mr. John C. Dvorak.org/blog. I'm just going to, every time I say Dvorak, I'll just say .org/blog. And
actually, I'm going to try to have my name legally changed.
Your Honor. not to Jesus Christ, but to Dvorak.org/blog.
Exactly.
That's a great idea. Maybe I could be Leo TWiT. I don't know if that's such a good
idea.
I thought
you already did that one.
I already am that. I'm living that. Did you see anybody? Nobody flew to New York to see the new Apple store. But boy, that looks gorgeous. Fifth Avenue, and it's all underground. And I mentioned that to somebody. They said, oh, yeah, Manhattan real estate is so expensive, they're moving underground. But that's not why they did it, because there's this giant glass cube up top occupying space. And it is spectacular. Anybody see the video?
They are so cool. Apple is so cool.
John, have you seen the pictures of this Apple store?
I blogged it.
Did you?
Yeah, I got a picture. John Brockman's offices are right next door, so he sent out a photo.
Oh, neat.
A couple days ago, I blogged it a day ahead on Thursday before they opened it. And, you know, I made some interesting comments. This thing's going to be open 24/7. It looks like a big, giant public restroom. Essentially, and I expect people going in there, you know, to pee.
Hey, where's the bathroom, man? Why would you have a 24/7 store? Do people really want to buy Macintosh computers or iPods at 4 in the morning?
It's New York, though, the city that never sleeps. So.
Never sleeps. I guess that makes sense.
Well, surely it's for students who suddenly get, like, you know, halfway through an all-nighter for an essay and their MacBook dies or something, and you go, oh, I've got to get a new MacBook before my essay's in tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you can run down the Apple store at like 5 in the morning.
I've got a few thousand left on my credit card. Let's buy a new computer. All right, I have a major confession to make. I didn't go to New York to buy it, but the minute I guess it was Monday morning, or was it Tuesday? It was Tuesday morning. Without a fanfare, without us, you know, no Steve Jobs speech, no mystery invitation to the press, Apple just kind of put it up on their website, the new MacBook. And I admit, not only did I buy one, but I paid the $150 premium to get it in black.
And how'd you like it?
Am I a sucker?
This is no, Leo. You are the most unbelievable example of it, like, not beyond early adopter. Anything that happens, I mean, we can go on with some of these things we've done, like Ventrilo and some of these other things. It's amazing that you jump on anything.
I have no impulse control. Actually, Alex Lindsay is worse. Alex Lindsay told me that he with the last Apple announcement, he actually called the Apple store and said, I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, hold it for me. I'll be in to get it.
I want one.
I want one. I don't know what it is, but I want one.
You know, I can tell him what it is.
Well, in this case,
it's too much disposable income. That's the
that's what it is. You think so?
So tell us about it. I haven't got it yet.
No, it's a I ordered it a BTO because that is built to order. I didn't go to the Apple store. I actually ordered it online because I wanted a gig of memory. In fact, if it hadn't been an extra 500, I probably would have ordered the 2 gigs.
Wow. They charge you an extra 500 just for
outrageous.
From 1 to 2 gigs?
Yeah. It's only 100 to go to from 512 to 1, which is still overpriced. But that's ridiculous to charge you 500.
Well, I went to see it in the Apple store in London, actually. They had a bunch of them out.
And?
Well, apart, I mean, the machine itself, the form factor is really, really nice. The 13-inch widescreen works really well.
That's what I was waiting for, is the screen size.
So that's great. The glossy screen is nice if you like glossy screens. The major problem with the premium on the black one is that the black is, it doesn't have that kind of polycarbonate coating. You know, the white one is kind of like shiny. It's all right. Really tough plastic.
Right.
The black one is just like a really matte black paint job. And the guys in the Apple store were like, oh, this is like never going to survive. They were saying, the guys that work there were saying, they were really worried that it was going to scratch like crazy because there's no protective coating over the top. And it just kind of feels like a powder coating kind of thing.
Yeah, I was wondering myself. In fact, there was...
You could have painted it yourself.
I know. For $150, I could have probably painted it blue. I know. I feel like such a sucker. But, you know, and the irony is... Well, IBM, HP, every laptop's black. Why am I paying a premium to get an Apple that looks like every other laptop?
Well, there hasn't been an Apple in black for a while, is there?
No,
not since like
a white laptop,
G3 or something.
A white laptop's too girly for me. I didn't want a white laptop.
I think black is cool. I wonder if they made it matte after their experience with the black iPods, where people were complaining they were just scratching so easily.
I think
easily.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah, and matte is so much easier when it gets scratched up. That makes it even look worse. You can't buff it out.
Yeah, and it's quite fingerprinty as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's just nice to see hardware devotion for a particular, you know, a complete PC. You have so many people building their own systems, and it's just nice to see.
Gee, black, huh?
I'm a sucker.
Yeah.
I know I'm a sucker, and I still can't resist it.
So it's got a 16:9 form factor screen?
Yeah, 1280x800.
Nice.
So if your DVDs will fit, you know, nicely.
1280x800 is the screen?
Yeah.
800?
Yeah.
It's like 16:10.
Yeah, it's a little bit bigger than 16:9.
Yeah.
What's the problem, John?
No, no, it just seems... like a, I don't know.
Well, the iBook, the 4x3 iBook is 1024x768, so it's wider, 1280 instead of 1024,
a little
and
higher.
It's slightly higher.
I was thinking
higher.
You at least go 1280x1024 or something.
Nobody seems to be complaining about the resolution, although I have to say that people do seem to not like the glossy. Do you have experience with glossy screens, Nick? I mean, Will, who's Nick? I don't know who Nick is. Will, have you had experience with glossy screens?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think everybody in Britain should be named Nick. It would save me some time.
Well, it's really a matter of personal preference. Some people really like the extra extra kind of contrast and brightness that you get from the glossy screen. And they look really good if you're like in the dark. But the problem is they reflect... daylight
everything.
And lights really, really badly. So they make it's really hard to work outside with a glossy screen because like the sun gets reflected like crazy.
So Robert, PCs come with glossy screens, right? Some?
Some. I've been using one from NEC for about 2 months now and I love it. But at the same point, it's not pointed toward any windows and there are no lights behind me.
You have to have control of the room lighting for it to work.
It really helps, but the blacks are liquid black, and the colors pop a little bit better. And they're one of my favorite displays, but you're totally right. Using it outdoors or with any kind of weird lighting, you're just going to see yourself or reflections of what's in the room.
What's the deal? I mean, is it just the way the screen is coated, the surface of the screen, or is it actually a different kind of screen?
No, it's just that top surface coating. It helps actually trap... When it goes to pure black, when you're trying to make black on an LCD and you have that backlight glow, it helps minimize that glow so the blacks look blacker. And they actually measure darker too, but you're trading off that anti-reflective or the diffusion that most LCD screens have.
Yeah. So I guess I will be able to kind of control the lighting, so it'll be okay. We'll see how it looks in a TV studio. It might not
just turn the brightness up enough.
Right.
Well, and I suppose we'll find out from you in a few weeks here what you.
I'll be bitching and moaning. the stories.
Leo, you never told us what you finally paid for this turkey.
I think it was almost $2,000 because I put 120 gig hard drive. Part of the reason I wanted to get the bigger hard drive and the more memory is I wanted to either run, and I have to decide which boot camp, so I can dual boot Windows, or I think more likely I'm going to run Parallels, which is the virtualization software that lets you run Windows in a window. On OS 10, but I'm figuring this is my Windows and my PC and my Mac.
I'm thinking you should almost go with the lowest memory build you can get in the thing,
and then
whatever
your own.
If you can get just one stick, because I imagine that their 1 gig option's 2 5/12 sticks.
It is.
So if you ever wanted to go beyond that, you're going to have to start over, essentially.
If I had thought about it, I would have bought the low end. Well, you want the 2 gigahertz so instead of the 1.03.
Totally.
So I would have bought the medium range white. I would have bought it with the stock drive and the stock RAM, pulled them, because it turns out it's, unlike the older iBooks, it's very easy to put in more memory. You don't have to take the keyboard out. It's like a more traditional laptop where there's a port you can open up, get at the memory, and the hard drive slides out. So I would have just done the upgrade myself. I was stupid.
I mean, $500 for a gig of RAM.
Isn't that outrageous?
That's out. Yeah.
It's DDR2. It's standard RAM.
Okay, so at least it's DDR2. So that is more cutting edge than, say, the old DDR1 stuff for notebooks.
How much though? If I wanted to go out and buy 2 gigs of DDR2, how much am I gonna?
For a notebook,
a couple hundred bucks.
Okay, so I'll save $300. I think I'm gonna need the 2 gigs though for Parallels to run Windows, because.
That's not true. They've done all kinds of research that shows once you get to a gig, it doesn't do you any good to load up more.
No, but understand, I'm running it at the same time as I'm running OS 10.
Are you going to run two simultaneously?
Simultaneously. So you need the 2 gigs because
you
want to allocate at least 512 to the Parallels partition, the memory
Photoshop
partition.
Photoshop will take as much as you can get.
Not to mention the fact that Photoshop. It's got motherboard video. It's got the 950.
Or Leo, you just sit around all day watching television.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So it doesn't really matter, does it? Who needs all that RAM?
Hey, it's nice under Linux, though.
Who needs another laptop, for that matter?
No, that's true. Yeah. I can't really justify
this. We should get out of the house more. Come on.
I'm
Take
busy.
A walk.
I got podcasts to do. I can't. Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll go to the new Apple store on Fifth Avenue. That'll get me out of the house.
Yeah, take a camera.
Reminds me a little bit of the Louvre, which has that big glass pyramid above ground.
Yeah, everybody says that. It's very derivative.
Well, of course, that's what John was saying. It's very much like a loo.
The loo.
So doesn't anybody find this story about the RIAA suing XM over its basically a TiVo-like device?
Yeah, this is interesting. In fact, there's some... remember the Sirius 50? What is it? The SR50? The S50?
The S50.
That allows you to record was held back... And it turns out that the RIAA went to Sirius and said, you can't release this. It was kind of a portable TiVo for Sirius. You can't release this unless you hobble it so that it will only record talk and will not record music. So Sirius did. They held it back. It was delayed. And they finally released it. And it only records talk. Now the RIAA is going after XM. XM, to their credit, is fighting.
As they should.
Good.
Well, and I have a question. What about the Dish Network, and what about the other guys, DirecTV? I know the Dish Network for a fact has all the Sirius stuff.
That's right.
Available online, and if you've got a TiVo device, you can record it. I mean, why don't they sue these guys?
But you're not recording it directly. You're recording the analog. That's the analog hole, right? You're recording the analog version of it.
No, I don't think so. That's a digital recorder.
Or if you have the satellite recorder, the integrated in.
Yeah, and these guys have been doing it a lot longer than XM Radio, so how come they weren't sued?
You know, I love it that the Consumer Electronics Association is now on the other side, you know, facing off against the RIAA.
That's nothing new.
Well, they've had enough. They don't want the RIAA.
No, this has been going on for years.
Leo,
that's been going on for years. Gary Shapiro has had nothing good to say about these guys for years. He represents the guys who make this equipment. He doesn't represent these copyright holders.
No, I agree. No. Here's what Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the CEA, Michael Petriconi, says. Here they go again. The record industry is returning to the courts in their nonstop efforts to stop new technology, neuter existing products, frustrate customers, and make illegal long-standing consumer home recording activities. I guess you're right, John. They're mad about a lot of stuff. Their new target is XM Satellite Radio, one of America's top technology success stories of the new millennium. XM's only offense is providing legal and exciting programming options to millions of Americans.
Well, what's interesting is that they said that the damages that the record industry was requesting was $150,000 per song recorded by a customer. And somebody sat down and worked it out and said it was like the amount that the industry was requesting was more than the GDP of France every year.
Well, just ask
which was actually greater than the turnover of the industry itself.
Ask for France instead. Just take the whole country. The lawsuit says the CEA is another ambush in the label's ongoing wars on innovators and consumers. It's time to say enough is enough. So what is the grounds that it is a violating copyright because you can make a copy a recording?
Well, it's allowing people to download direct digital versions and then play those digital versions on that player out of order. It's like a time shifter.
Right.
And so the RIAA is saying that it's like iTunes. But what the XM guys and the industry guys are saying is that actually it's not like iTunes because you can't transfer it on. You can only play it on that device.
Well, you can't take it off the device?
No.
Oh, well, that's ridiculous then.
So it's only like, you know, recording off the radio or something. And in fact...
But the Home Recording Act supports that.
The Audio Home Recording Act in the States specifically says that if you can't transfer it off, then it's legal. And that was an act that the RIAA, like, worked to, like, gestate and approve back in the day. And now they've made no mention at all of that act. There's no mention of it at all in their lawsuit. It's like they're just ignoring it.
My question is, we have to get a lawyer on. I remember that the Home Audio Recording Act was specifically for analog recordings. And did they not exempt digital recordings, or did it strikes me that it was for analog?
As far as I know, they didn't exempt digital.
Okay. Well,
something called the AHRA.
That's it.
And it says no action may be brought under this title alleging infringement of copyright based on the manufacturer's importation, distribution of a digital audio recording device, a digital audio medium, or analog recording device or analog recording medium, or based on the non-commercial use by a consumer, such as a device or medium for making digital music recordings or analog music recordings.
So a judge is going to look at this and throw it out.
Yeah.
Well, what they're saying is that it's possibly a negotiating tactic to get XM to pony up more money. But of course, if XM knows that a judge is going to throw it out based on that, it's no negotiating tactic at all, is it? Really?
And XM has, I think, been pretty clear that they're not going to go for this. Here's what Mitch Bainwall of the RIAA says. He says XM wants to offer listeners what is essentially a free version of iTunes without paying the music companies for the right to sell their songs. Don't they pay for the right to put that music on XM? Of course they do.
And XM is actually one of the greatest payers of music royalties in the States.
He says it's a great deal for XM because it drives subscriptions, but it's fundamentally unfair to songwriters and labels and threatens to puncture the integrity of the digital music marketplace. Puncture the integrity of the digital music marketplace, right? Is it growing? Well, let me play the devil's advocate. Don't artists deserve to be compensated if you're going to be able to record their stuff and listen to it later? Or
as
no?
I could do right now over the radio?
It's kind of like that, except it's digital. It's better quality than the radio.
Yeah, that's arguable.
Well, yeah, but XM already is compensating the artists under the framework that's being laid out by the American legislature.
And the Apple argument's a little weak because you have no control over the order of the songs as they come into the player. You're at the mercy of XM for their schedules and for what, sure, they break it up by genre, but it's up to the end user to record those things.
So you can't strip these songs out and take them off or put them anywhere else. All you can do is listen to them in a different order if you want.
Or create analog versions with, you know.
But you could always do that.
Very manual labor. Yeah, you can do that with anything.
Right.
So
that's the so-called analog hole. Well, lawsuits are, I mean, this isn't the only lawsuit in the news. Creative Labs, I guess we don't call them labs anymore, they're just creative, has gotten creative. Their marketplace dwindling. They can't sell sound cards. Nobody needs them. They can't sell the
Zen.
Oh,
no, they sell sound cards.
Do they still sell them? Don't people get sound cards on their motherboard now, and aren't they happy with those? Do you think Creative has a business with selling sound cards anymore?
Oh,
yeah, they've
sure.
got some good. Yeah, they've got some good stuff. They sell some good new gaming cards. The X-Fi is pretty cool.
Oh, come on!
They probably largely are there because of inertia. You certainly wouldn't create a company that didn't exist today in order to sell sound cards. But you know, they've established themselves, and there are higher end 6-channel.
Because I want surround
exactly.
All right.
Their sound cards for the PC are better than anything you can get integrated into a motherboard. I mean, audio quality to performance with, especially some of the newer games that use up to 120 channels of audio simultaneously, especially some of the massive multiplayer stuff. There is a reason to have it, but you're right. I doubt it. I doubt there's going to be a new sound card company jumping in to fill that space anytime soon.
Creative had hoped to make a good business out of its... In fact, they were one of the very early MP3 players, the Creative Diamond Rio.
give them credit for popularizing MP3 because they're the ones that brought the first MP3 player that got enough attention that the RIAA sued them and in the process popularized. By the way, the MP3 format would probably be languishing right now if it wasn't for the RIAA suing Creative Labs for their original players.
And now Creative's back in court suing Apple, saying that Apple stole the user interface for the iPod from Creative. Now, Creative's patent was filed in 2001, but they didn't get it to last year. I don't know. That doesn't look like...
And I've seen a lot of the Creative players. I've never seen anything as slick as the iPod interface from anybody but Apple.
I don't get it, yeah, because the patent is just really for hierarchical menus where you click a category and you go down and you go into the category and you get a list of songs and so forth.
Ooh, nested subdirectories. Yay.
Yeah, there's an invention.
And I think the key on the iPod UI is the click wheel. And
yeah.
I mean, I think one of the reasons people buy the iPod is because it has such a superior user interface to anything that Creative has come up with.
I think all that will come of this is that they'll end up litigating, somebody will settle, or Apple will end up getting Creative's bogus patent overturned, and that'll be the end of it.
It's a classic, though, in American business. If you can't beat them in the marketplace, take them to court.
Now, I was reading that Apple turned around and sued Creative today or yesterday. Yeah, what was that about? That? Yeah, that's what I'm curious.
Well, that's kind of the question. Nobody quite knows. As far as Engadget says, that there's no details actually as to what they've turned around and sued them for. But apparently it's outside the realm of this kind of interface patent. So it looks like Apple was sort of digging some dirt on Creative whilst Creative was digging the dirt on them.
Man.
Well, Apple's probably got a few patents in their portfolio that Creative violated too, I'm sure. I mean, that's what the Silicon Valley story is always about. Yep. But, you know, the more interesting suit, since we're on the topic, is the Symantec suit suing Microsoft.
They want to stop Vista.
No.
This is a classic.
Tell us what happened, John.
Well, apparently, you know, somewhere along the lines, Microsoft got hold of something, I guess, Veritech, I believe. In fact, let me get the story up. The here it is.
Veritas. Oh, it's the Veritas.
Veritas designed a file structure of some sort, some way of storing what they call a storage technology. And Symantec, of course, bought them, and now there's a debate over whether or not Microsoft got the full rights to use this stuff or not. And Symantec says they didn't, and Microsoft said they did.
There may be some merit to this because Microsoft admits they're using it. They licensed it in 1996.
Right.
So it really comes down to what that license agreement allows them to do.
You know, I don't understand how these things get this far. You either have the paperwork or you don't. I mean, is there paperwork?
Symantec is also saying that Microsoft tricked the patent office into granting patents.
Not that Microsoft would ever trick anybody.
Well, I think what's good about or interesting about this story, at least, is the fact that Microsoft, you know, which is responsible for the BSA and all these, you know, these somewhat nefarious lawsuits that make people do these audits and do this all this stuff.
Right.
I mean, now they're in a position, you know, and by the way, if you do an audit, you don't have the right paperwork, you know, you have to pay all these fees or fines. Now Microsoft's kind of have the shoe, you know, they have to deal with this kind of situation with their paperwork, which, you know, could be lost for all we know.
According to Symantec, Microsoft was so bold as to file fraudulent documents with the U.S. government claiming stake to Veritas Inventions. There are Microsoft patents. In other words, Microsoft patented something that Symantec says Veritas actually invented.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting trick. Yeah, very rarely in today's day and age can you get away with that. I mean, even a lot of these fraudulent patent suits don't get very far anymore because there's so many people on the internet that are combing these things over that once these things show up in the literature, as it were, you know, on the online literature, I mean, the word gets out real fast. I think that's what happened. You know, Microsoft can't pull a stunt like that and get away with it.
Any other lawsuits come? This is the lawsuit happy issue of Twitter. Oh, yes, actually, there is another lawsuit. ICM. Which is the company behind, they're a registrar. They're the ones behind the XXX domain. They, you know, and we talked about this last week. ICANN decided not to allow it, mostly because they would have to enforce it, and they didn't want to. ICM is suing the two departments of the U.S. government for access to documents it claims showed that the U.S. government pressured ICANN into rejecting the domain. They're suing the Department of Commerce and the Department of State. saying that the government said, don't do it. Now, I heard somebody told me, actually, after our show, somebody sent me an email saying, no, the real problem was ICANN didn't want to be put in the position of enforcing this XXX domain.
What's there to enforce?
Well, I guess the theory would be
they don't enforce the .org or the anything else. I mean, what difference does it make?
.edu? No.
Now, would that company make money from the sale of XXX domain names?
Yes.
Okay, so there's the whole reason right there, because nobody was unhappy with that decision. I mean, the porn industry, the parent teachers people, or whoever, the concerned parents group, whatever, everybody was happy at the way that it went down, because ICANN didn't want to be the enforcement agent, like you mentioned. The XXX folks don't want to, I mean, the pornography industry didn't want to get into the position of being forced into a domain where basically, you know, nobody's going to be able to really enforce it, and then you end up with people who have both the .com and the XXX domain names, and just that in complete mess. So
I wanted it. I'm the only one who wanted it, apparently.
Oh, I want one, but
it's a good idea. I think it's a great idea.
It's a great idea. Come on.
It would make, well, and we talked about this last
week.
It'll
take years before it would ever catch to the point where it would be of any use, and maybe it never would, but at least it's a start. Right now, we're doing absolutely nothing about
Nothing. Right. Nothing. And one more lawsuit to round out our lawsuit stories. We need to do a legal show, not a tech show. A lawyer in Pennsylvania is suing Linden Lab, the publisher of Second Life, saying the company unfairly confiscated his virtual land. The guy had a technique, a trick for essentially cheating the auction system. In Second Life, this is the virtual world that we're talking about, and he was able to, by taking the URL for the auction and substituting the user ID, buy land much more cheaply than it was worth, and so he's a speculator, and then of course he wants to sell it. Well, Linden Lab found out. They said under the terms of service, you're out of here. And the guy's now suing, say, but wait a minute, I had thousands of dollars sunk into virtual land. I mean, real thousands of dollars sunk into virtual land. I want it back. I love stories like this, and only because I just love it that these virtual worlds are becoming so much like reality. People take,
we're gonna be paying taxes on that land soon.
You bet.
You go. That would end it.
that'd be all.
I when I read these stories, I just shake my head like, wow, this is the weirdest thing I've ever read.
Finally, the judge issues a split decision in the AT&T privacy lawsuit. This is a story we've been covering for a while. The Electronic Frontier Foundation sued AT&T, saying they illegally gave the NSA those internet and telephone records without a court order or a warrant. The judge kind of split the baby on this one. He made both sides unhappy, I guess. Let me see what the federal... I'm trying to find the quote from the federal judge. He ordered the EFF not to give the document... The problem is these documents that the EFF got for its lawsuit, the government says they want them back. You can't release these documents. This would for security reasons. So the government won in the sense that the judge said, you got to hold on to those documents. But the EFF won because the judge said, but the Justice Department can't have them back. The Justice Department tried to classify the documents as military secrets.
But in fact, they're now useless because the EFF can't really do anything.
Nobody can look at them.
Yeah.
The AT&T says they hold sensitive trade secrets. The government says they hold military secrets. And the Electronic Frontier Foundation says it's the only way we could pursue this lawsuit. And the judge said, well, just hold on to it. We'll figure this out later.
Does it strike anyone else as that something very suspicious is going on, and that the response in this particular case is, in particular with AT&T and such, is that they are trying to hide something?
Oh, clearly.
You just wouldn't be acting that way if you weren't guilty.
Yeah, they're trying to hide the fact that if they did something wrong, it's going to cost them a fortune in fines.
But who's going to fine them? Not the government.
Well, I mean, you can always take a class action suit against them. I'm sure there's some way.
Well, no, isn't it precisely the government that would fine them, though? Because wasn't there something about one of the regulatory bodies in the state says that if you're a phone company and you illegally release phone
records.
Yeah,
it's the Telecommunications Act of 1934.
Yeah, then you're subject to oodles and oodles of fines. And if it turns out that the, you know, whether it was the government that tried to like induce them to release those phone records doesn't matter.
So one branch of the government's going to fine them for doing what another branch of the government asked them to do.
Absolutely.
Only in America.
Only in America.
I think there was
only in America.
I think there was also a story recently in the New York Times saying that the government was now processing reporters' phone logs in order to look at the case for suing reporters who were releasing some information that the government wasn't happy with. I think it was the original NSA spying story.
See, and so this is the real fear of all this.
Right. Actually, it was ABC that's been covering this more than anybody on the ABC blogs.
And I mean, and there now it suddenly becomes very frightening because the government has all of the records, apparently, from multiple phone companies that allow them to do this massive cross-correlation and find out what's going on. So suddenly it's no longer terrorists that we're trying to find. Now it's our own reporting industry.
But they are terrorists because they're revealing what the government's up to.
Yeah.
Undermining the security of this great nation. And that's exactly why this stuff is problematic, because it took
2 weeks for this to happen.
It didn't take long before the government starts criminalizing its own citizens for revealing the act. It's exactly what happened with the Pentagon Papers and Daniel Ellsberg. Not to bring back an old story.
Boy, that's a dated one.
Stephen Levy, writing in Newsweek, said an interesting thing. He said, you know, the real problem is this information is useless. It's too massive. There's too much of it.
This is where he's dead wrong.
Yeah.
He's dead wrong. This is unbelievably wrong.
He said they'd be better off starting with the terrorists and building up a tree that way.
You run network analysis tools on these data sets, and you can see who's calling who. You can build networks up. You can see who hangs out with who. I mean, I've seen demos of this stuff. It's astonishing. And the more data you have, the easier it is. This is nonsense. I don't know.
That's exactly what they want. They want the largest database possible to really fine tune some of this new software that's out there.
Right, and you don't need the details. All you need is the network data, and you can pinpoint everything.
It's kind of scary.
And the piece of software that AT&T installed purportedly can sustain speeds of, 10 gigabits per second? So you add that a few times over throughout their ins and outs through their network, and they could easily be monitoring every single point-to-point, whatever they want to look at. And recently on TV, you'll see commercials now touting that variability. It's like your data could not be any more secure. We know exactly where it goes and, you know, where it comes. And which, I would want that too if it were my business data flying across their networks. But at the same point, if they open that up to government with no checks, no balances, or very, very apparently limited checks and balances, gets a little Orwellian to me.
John, were these techniques, these data mining techniques, developed for business first or developed by government?
The ones I saw, which was, and this was a number of years ago, this is at least 10 years ago, I saw the Interpol software demoed, and it showed how you can take and analyze just, you know, calls. You don't have to know what's on the call. You just need to see who's calling who, and they were showing how you could see how, you know, an organized crime gang was organized, who was talking to who the head guy was. You could take in, and the more data you had, the more you could kind of flesh out this information. And then by the time you're done, you look at a picture, it's like a org chart. It's unbelievable. And so that's what's going on. I don't know what people are thinking if they think that there's too much data here. Too much is good.
More the merrier. Well, and one of the reasons we have Will on today is because in Britain, in a kind of a similar story, the British government is asking to start enforcing Part 3 of RIPA, the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, which has been around for some years. The government hasn't put Part 3 into effect. Nick, Will, why do I keep calling you Nick? I don't know why. Will, do you want to explain what Part 3 is all about?
Sure. So Parts 1 and 2 of the Act have been in force since like 2000. And they basically are like a legal framework for how the government can use like electronic surveillance and also human surveillance. So Part 3 is about extended powers for making people reveal cryptographic keys. So the idea is that if you have a terrorist sends an encrypted message to somebody else, And the message is intercepted by the police and the terrorist is apprehended. But of course, they don't know what the terrorist has said. So they've made it, they want to make it a criminal offense to refuse to provide the key to decrypt the message that's been sent that the police wants to know about. That is basically the sort of gist of it.
That tells you one good thing, that at least some of the high-end commercial and encryption available to consumers is strong enough.
Works. They're scared.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's been a bit of an outcry in the British press about this.
Well, I think rightly so. I mean, if they start forcing, and by the way, you don't have to be a terrorist. You just have to be a suspected terrorist. And if you say, no, I'm not giving you the keys, they don't have to prove anything else. They throw you in jail.
And of course, the problem is that, there are a number of problems with it. Number one is the definition of terrorism. And the definition of terrorism under this act is anybody that seeks to change the opinion of the government and anybody that seeks to challenge state power.
So like the New York Times.
Which, of course,
Times
is like
or,
any know, old anybody. Protester, you know. Yeah, so that's number one. Number two is that there are the civil liberties issue. And the problem is that there are no firm guidelines actually set out in the laws. It's all shunted to these kind of namby-pamby codes of practice that nobody really looks at. So that's sort of number two. Number three is that it's practically really difficult to enforce because, number one, if you've got a stream of data, how do you know what's junk and what's crypto? Number two is that there's nothing to stop someone saying, oh, well, that message you intercepted from me is just like a love letter to my girlfriend. And
she
by
happens
the way,
to
lost,
like random data.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, I lost the key to decrypt it, so I'm really sorry about that. And that you can't prove that somebody is withholding the key from you.
Well, what about it, Steve? I mean, that's true. That's what TrueCrypt does, for instance. They offer plausible deniability. Their data is indistinguishable from noise.
Well, and there are lots of technologies, too, that would make it impossible even for the people who participated in the conversation to subsequently decrypt it. There, you could randomly change the key as soon as you initiate the connection, and that gets encrypted, and nobody is able to turn back the clock and get the key that's already gone. I mean, it's called perfect forward security, and you know, you and I have talked about that, where if a key becomes compromised at some time in the future, nothing that has been done prior to that key compromise can be decrypted. So, I mean, there are technologies that you just can't legislate in this fashion. And I mean, and
well, that's
they're
a relief, to be honest,
secure.
Because I was sure that as soon as that the U.S. government was watching this with great interest, and if it survived in Britain, that they were going to implement it here in the States.
Yeah, I mean, we really have a problem with the way things are moving because we you know, as you and I have talked in our Security Now podcast, there exists now extremely available, absolutely, you know, for all practical purposes, unbreakable crypto that everyone can have, and governments really dislike the idea that they're not able to eavesdrop or pursue for law enforcement purposes, you know, the transactions that are happening over these encrypted channels. And it's really the case that our government can't crack this. And I mean, I don't see any logical outcome if the government refuses to allow this to go on other than outlawing cryptography or outlawing classes that they don't have back doors to.
Hey, they have tried to outlaw cryptography a couple of times.
Clipper.
If you remember, I think the first attempt was about 15 years ago they tried to do that, and then they tried it again. And they just haven't been successful, but I mean, they still can attempt to outlaw it. I mean, there's also something else we should mention, which is nested encryption, which you have, where you have a fake password that releases what looks like an encrypted file, and then you actually have something else buried.
Sure. Well, of course, the problem is that it's the reason no government really wants to completely ban cryptography when they think about it is that it's so bad for business. I mean, you can't have major banks doing business where they don't have strong encryption because, you know, money could go anywhere.
Well, you could have a government back door to that encryption, however.
Well, exactly.
A mandated back door.
Yeah, the banks don't want that either.
Yeah, well, and in the UK, you know, one of the major problems was that, the thing that really makes a mockery of this law is that the sentence, like for refusing to give up your cryptography, is 2 years. Well, of course, if you're a serious criminal doing like serious business, you know, you'll take the 2 years rather than give up the evidence, which might, you know, indict you for life or something. So on a practical basis,
well,
it's
kind of stupid.
Well,
don't give them any ideas. I'll put myself in law enforcement's shoes. It must be extremely frustrating to them that it's now very easy for anybody to encrypt stuff in such a way that they can't see it. Although I remember talking to the Secret Service a few years ago, and I said, how do you handle that? And they said, well, you usually give us the password. He said, you know, almost always a criminal will unencrypt or give you the password if you ask them nicely.
Well, they've done some pretty fancy things. A few years ago, the FBI planted Who, What, When, I think, or one of those key loggers. And there's hardware key loggers now that can't be detected under any circumstances. You can talk to anybody about this. You can get them out of New Zealand. And they go in and bust into somebody's place, and then they plant like this. It's like putting a bug in an office. And they just wait till the guy types the password a few times, and bingo, the guy's busted. There was a guy, a Jersey mobster, that was caught that way. And I think it probably goes on a lot. I mean, just, you know,
there's old-fashioned ways of
catching crooks.
They don't need Section 3 is what you're saying.
No, of course not.
And it's a bad idea anyway. Businesses aren't going to like it.
We all agree on that.
Yeah. Well, it scares me because and just makes me want to encrypt everything. Come and get me, COPPA.
Well, of course, then there's been another new law proposed in the UK, or at least come out in the press this week, which wants to criminalize sort of system admins and little scripters and things like this.
Yeah, talk about that. I thought that was hysterical.
Oh, it's just amusing. It's basically, it would be illegal to write a computer program which, quote, could be used for sort of illegal purposes like hacking, denial of service, etc. And of course, the problem is that almost any tool can be used for anything. So if you write something like, you know, Perl or Nmap, of course that can be used for nefarious purposes, but it's a legitimate system admin tool. But under this law, if you wrote Perl today or tomorrow when it's in force, you'd be subject to time in the clink. Which is just,
now,
it's just one of those.
This is not a law yet, is it? I mean, this is a proposed.
Not yet. Yeah. It's still proposed. This was one of those examples of lawmakers just not having a clue.
Yeah, you know, these
about
people
the
just don't
doing.
Know anything about anything. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, but they're in charge.
Well, I mean, they're usually supposed to have advisors at least that can tell them about this stuff and say, hey, this is crazy.
I wish somebody would.
it's not very clever.
We talked about Blue Security last week. This is the anti-spam service that had a do not intrude list. If you subscribed and you became a Blue Security customer and you got spam, Blue Security would politely ask the spammer to cease and desist and get you off the list. Of course, they were shut down by spammers who were mad about this. And then not only that, but when Blue Security moved its blog over to TypePad, the spammers shut down TypePad as well and put thousands of blogs off the air. Now Blue Security says, you know, we give up. You win. We are going out of business because we don't want our anti-spam technology to create an ever-escalating cyber war through our continued operations. I think it's kind of sad.
Well, it looks like the talent was on the wrong side of that argument.
I guess so.
What really probably happened behind the scenes, too, is that they had a relationship with, you know, whatever bandwidth provider where they were having to end up bearing the cost of the denial of service attack. Exactly. So there was a huge bill involved, and they just had to say, finally, okay, we can't continue this. We can't sustain this.
You know, it's sad is that they had 500,000 users, and the people I've talked to who were Blue Security subscribers were very happy with it. They said it was very effective in eliminating spam.
Hey, they can always go to my guy. I don't get any spam.
I get no spam, Dvorak. They actually, I think that ultimately really is the answer to this, is that these kinds of, you can't interact with spammers. That's not the way to stop spam. If you can't throw them in jail, there's no point in trying to talk them out of it.
Or they'll unleash a 10,000 bot attack on your system.
Exactly. All you can do is use technology to, as your guy is doing, John, is use technology to filter the spam out.
Yeah, you can go to my blog and click on I Get No Spam, and you'll find out all about it.
Yeah.
Not that I'm here to promote things.
And your blog address would be?
Dvorak.org/blog, and it's junkemailfilter.com, which is Mark Perkel.
Mark's just using some well-known...
he's using a lot of tools.
Tools,
but he
yeah.
stays on top of it, and that's what, kind of what makes it work.
Yeah. So let's see. We've got lawsuits to stop Vista. By the way, you think they'll be able to get an injunction against Vista?
Are you kidding?
they won't need one.
Well, right. Maybe they don't need one.
The lawsuit will be over 2 years from now, just before Vista comes out.
It'll never ship anyway. Lawsuits to stop the iPod, to put the iPod out of business. Yes or no? No chance of success there.
Everyone hates a winner.
They do, don't they? The Brits are trying to shut down encryption. I think that's going to, we've agreed now, that's hopeless and useful. An attorney sues Second Life to get his money back. Hopeless.
Uh-huh. And, of course, you forgot to mention the BlackBerry countersuit. That's another lawsuit that has to be on the list.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. So BlackBerry, what's the deal?
I don't know. I never followed it, but it's that, you know, they're just...
Are they suing the other guy?
I mean, this is... I followed this early on. I kept pretty good tabs on it, and then I just gave up.
Is BlackBerry suing NTP now? Or No, there was another company...
He's suing Visto.
Visto, that's right. Visto's suing... So NTP sued BlackBerry, won, got a big settlement. Then Visto comes along and says, oh, yeah, we have patents, too. And right. Now they're trying to put BlackBerry out of business. And you're saying BlackBerry is counter-suing Visto?
Well, that's what it says in the ZDNet story.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know, one good thing, I think one thing you can determine from all of this is that it's a good idea to be a lawyer. Are you regretting now, Will, not, you know, going and getting your, finishing your degree?
No, I don't. I'd like to sleep at night, you know, and not upside down.
It is sad. From one perspective, it sort of represents the maturation of our industry, but at the same time, this is all inevitable consequences to a very broken patent system. I mean, we've known the patent system has not been functioning for 20 years, and people have said, "Oh, look, it's bad, it's broken, it doesn't work right." And you know, now as business begins to turn to legislation instead of creativity, this is what happens. And you know, people like Symantec are suing Microsoft, and everybody's suing everybody.
Yeah, well, it's not even just the patents, though. I mean, just last week talked about the Beatles and the Apple and the music, or trademark. That was a trademark issue, and then finally, Apple finally wins, and then on top of that, McCartney's wife, you know, sues him or is going to sue him for divorce, and it's like suits. It's unbelievable. This is like, you know, the beginning of the end for Western civilization, the way I see it.
End of days.
Well, the
rapture.
Don't they in Britain have a system that reduces the amount of litigation going on? I know in Canada they require that a losing
a little bit here and there.
They make
an effort to try and stop people.
It seems like something a real hobby in the States. You know, it's.
Although if they have a system where they're trying not to have so many lawsuits, why are they trying to legislate against cryptography?
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
The one thing that keeps us. Have our privacy and security on the internet. Yes, let's outlaw that immediately.
So, Robert, a couple of weeks ago, you said you were going to be looking at the new HD DVD players.
Yeah.
Are you happy with them?
It's beautiful. No, you know, it's a total first-gen product, especially the $500 unit from Toshiba, the low-end one.
It's $500.
Isn't that really a Linux box?
It is indeed. It's a gig of RAM, from what I understand, a P4 processor.
It boots up
like a PC.
Can you get it to boot Linux? I mean, and put a some I/O on it and use it as a computer?
If you do the firmware update for it, if one's ever released, you actually have to click OK on the GPL license or whatever.
You're kidding.
It's pretty cool, though. I mean, it's all open source software internally. So
that's actually good. One of the reasons that the TiVo was so hackable is they couldn't really prevent it because of the GPL. It was, you know, you can't really say, well, you can't modify our kernel because that's kind of the license agreement of the kernel. So maybe this will be a very hackable device.
What sort of content is available now in HD DVD?
Right now, if I last look on Amazon, I think there were actually about 15 titles available, with another 15, 20, 30 coming very soon. That's strike one for the average person buying it. There's simply not enough available yet.
It's a lot to play for pay for a player that plays 30 movies.
They really get those movies memorized, aren't they?
Oh, but the image quality is stunning, no doubt.
So what movies did you look at, and what TV did you use and all that stuff?
I was using a brand new HP rear projection 1080p
DLP
set. Mm-hmm. Gorgeous TV. They're 5880, I believe it is. That hooked up. I did it a couple different ways. I actually took the HDVD player and went directly into the TV 1080i.
What's the horizontal on that?
For
the 1080, the
1920 by 1080.
Is it really 1920? Are you sure?
Yes. Oh. It accepts those resolutions. You know, whether or not your average 1080p display will display the finest details of a 1080i signal or a 1080p signal, that's something else entirely.
You're talking about the TV at this point. What is the output of the HD DVD player? What's the
1080i, and that's another limitation. The format on the disc itself is 1080p content, and currently I believe they're all using VC1, which is Microsoft's Media Center 9 format.
Oh, they are.
Well, there's three different formats that both Blu-ray and HDVD will use. VC1 is the one I'm seeing the most of right now. And then you also have H.264, and the other one just escapes me at the moment.
So the manufacturer can choose to encode the DVD in one of those three different codecs.
Totally.
And the player can play any of the three.
Exactly.
Does it tell you on the box how it's encoded?
It does not. And that's something else. It was just that it was, I believe, was it Universal whoever handed us some of the first content? That's how they described it in their press releases.
They told you.
So
is there a reason for consumers to care, or are they all equal?
No. And if anything, it'll be more about seeing how mature the encoders become, squeezing. Granted, you have so much data to work with in terms of providing the image on the screen, but making it as best as possible. And also, it'll be more about what sources they've dragged this from. Is it a good film scan? Was it digital to begin with? And those things will start to pop up. I'm noticing for some of the film transfers, in particular Goodfellas, which it is the best looking transfer or best looking version of that movie I think I've ever seen.
But see, I'd almost buy that just to watch Goodfellas. I mean, Goodfellas is a good enough movie that I think that'd be almost worth it to be able to see it as good as it could be.
And I'm noticing also for a lot of the film transfer DVDs I look at, you see film grain.
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing as much in some of the HDVD film transfers, which is kind of interesting. Because some people, depending on the TV, it can turn into a noisy looking mess for bad TVs. But for good TV, that film grain almost lends that theater quality to the video itself. And that's kind of nice in a sense.
But you think they're paying more attention to the encoding, or?
Certainly hope so. It, just for the quality alone. I haven't seen any. The detail is so much better now, they have to. And if anything, it's just simply going to show off issues of how the movie was put together to begin with, be it a lighting error or somebody's bad makeup, or everything is just so much more detailed. And I mean, they say it is 6 times the progressive resolution, but I see, with your eye looking at the screen, DVD in one hand, HDVD in the other, you will honestly be able to see 2 or 3 times the detail, no doubt about it. And it's just phenomenal. But this first generation player, again, it only supports the one format. It doesn't give you true access. If you have a 1080p TV, you're sending 1080i into it. And I've processed it through a really high-end processor into 1080p and then looked at it on the TV. And it gets really hard for me to say if there's a difference or not without taking a bunch of pictures and comparing A/B. And that's really, I think for most people, it's going to be the only way to really see a difference is looking at it side by side, properly set up. But it'll beat an upscaling player. There's no comparison between like an upscale DVD and an HDVD, especially on the large TVs.
So if you take a DVD and you stick it in this thing, and by the way, I want to sympathize with everybody out there listening to these guys throwing around the fact that they'd pay $500 for a player just to watch one movie.
Hey, but
and people out there with 3-year-old
laptops,
you know. But
the
anyway,
price
no,
of the
not.
Players.
You're Leo. You got too much money.
No.
Anyway,
I wouldn't do that. I'm just thinking it is a good movie.
No, that's kind of what I said. I want to ask this question. Does the thing do line doubling, line tripling, line quadrupling when it runs a regular DVD through it, or what?
It scales up as well, and it appeared to do a pretty good job.
Hey, and remember that it has a gig of memory in it, and that's what Leo paid for his gig.
That's true.
$500.
That's a steal.
I didn't.
He could have actually gotten less memory.
I didn't buy the 2 gig of memory. I turned it down because it was too expensive.
I only paid
$100 for the 1 gig.
That's right.
Oh, the way you just said it, Leo, I was under the impression that you had bought the memory and said,
stupid.
You know, I'll spend this kind of money, but I think you suck, and then you busted it up and threw it in their face.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, that's what I did, John. That's it, exactly.
And then lit a $100 bill and walked out the place.
So there, take that, Steve Jobs. Huh.
But Robert, what do you expect the second-gen HD DVD players to add to this?
1080p, I mean, number one.
I would wait for 1080p, wouldn't you? I mean,
you know what? Most people don't have 1080p TVs, and enough screen sizes to really notice the difference.
Right.
And I mean, I'm looking at some 40. Anything below, say, 42 inches for 1080p, it almost gets ridiculous because the pixels become so small that it becomes really hard to see a difference between that, say, and something with maybe 720p resolution. But the other thing, hopefully they'll have a dedicated processor which will help speed up some of the startup times and the point you actually put the disc in the player and hit the play button to the point you're actually watching the movie.
Give us a feeling for that. How long does it take? It sounds to me as though you could drive to the theater in the amount of time it takes.
I'll be honest, let's see. From the point you put the disc in, there has to be a minimum, I'd say, of 30 seconds before it even realizes that it's an HDVD disc. Give it, say, another 30 seconds. This is not a lot of time, but it's not like my standard DVD player sitting in my living room. But I'd say at least another 30 seconds after that before you actually get that first pop-ups here, the welcome to HD DVD, yada, yada, yada. And then finally you get to the where you can hit play on the thing. And also just the user interface in terms of the remote and everything, there's lots of room for improvement there. It literally was thrown out. There's actually buttons on the remote that either don't function or have no function or, we didn't have time to fully clean this up. But if you have to have it and you can, and there are some titles out there that you like, it will. Once it's playing, you really don't care about it. All of that seemed to fade for me.
You know, the issue with the UI fascinates me because what's wrong with the old UI that the DVD players use? It seemed adequate. Why do we move to a next generation and the next thing you know, the UI falls apart? That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, that was more. It has mostly to do with just it's a Linux box, and there are certain delays involved. And it's like, well, once it's set up and properly running, and the movie finally gets up, it's beautiful. But the other thing too is that within for HD DVD at least, and for what we've looked at, it's the menu systems involved now are awesome. That upgrade alone is really different. You get a translucent lower third, basically, that'll pop up on all of the discs. All the discs seem to be processed in a way that gives you thumbnail views of all the chapter titles now, which you can breeze through backwards and forwards. And potentially, with the Ethernet connection that's on the back of the thing, you'll be able to access web content that's related to the movie and things like that. That's a lot of stuff I don't care about, but some people might. And the user interface in that sense is really nice. It's just sometimes you get hiccups, pauses, that sort of thing needs to be just massaged out. And I'm sure a firmware update will take care of that. I have yet to see one. And I'll be honest with you, though, I don't want to own two different DVD players for this format war that
right.
The darn companies have started. I'm for my money, I'm holding off for one that plays both. It's just I don't see it. They obviously are not going to come to terms and unify on anything. And there will be two formats for us. So.
Well, of course, one of the problems with the PlayStation 3, Sony is touting this ability to play Blu-ray, but it is only Blu-ray, and it is only a first-generation player. It's going to have all these teething issues that you're going to see with HD DVD. And so a lot of people say, like, well, I know a lot of people that are holding off for the second generation, because like anything, you buy into the first generation and you've got all the bugs and problems. And for PS3 customers who are kind of more mainstream, maybe, don't they want a sort of slightly more mature experience, maybe?
Yeah, but you're not going to see the first Universal player coming from Sony, of all people.
They're a Blu-ray house. They're not going to do
that. That directly ties into the price of the announced price for the PS3. It sounds expensive, and it is, in a sense, but if you add on the HDVD drive that Microsoft announced, they still haven't announced a price for that drive yet, but if you paired that with the 360, it would be at least as much money.
Yeah.
But Microsoft gives you that option, though. It's like, look, you know what? I don't care about the HDVD part. Just I want to play my game. So, okay, I can knock
Microsoft
a couple $100 off that.
Microsoft is actually saying that the HD DVD and the 360 will be cheaper than the PS3.
The DVD?
They've actually come out.
So maybe less than $900 for the DVD. Well, that's nice.
And Sony's, to their credit, their game consoles have always been the best DVD players for standard DVD playback compared to anybody else. I mean, the 360 and the original Xbox are two of the worst DVD players on the planet. That's just my. I mean, but who? I wouldn't be looking at my game console making buying decisions.
When you say that Sony's always made a great DVD player with all their what do you mean always? How many have they done?
Well, the PS2.
Okay, one.
Well, that's always. But that is always.
One. Thank you.
Do all of these HD DVD players, Blu-ray or HD DVD, playback the old DS-style DVDs?
Yeah.
That's given.
That has to.
You don't throw away your old DVDs.
No.
And they do a pretty good job of that?
Of course, yeah. They both will.
And they do a good job of it.
Although nobody has a Blu-ray player yet, so I guess, you know, technically.
he's making it up.
No, I'm not making it up. I mean, this is what's been announced, but.
No, they have to. They could not do that.
Well, they don't play each other's format. I can see why
No, they don't. They're going to be backward compatible.
Samsung, put that universal player out.
Samsung pulled the plug on that, and be for a good reason. Apparently, it was a big secret, but now everybody knows that there's a licensing deal with Blu-ray. If you do Blu-ray, you cannot do the other one.
Is that it?
A combo drive. That's the reason we're not going to see one.
You know, I was at HP last week, down at their quarters, looking at some of their new stuff, and they used to be firmly in one camp or the other. With the previous generation of recordable DVD media, they were the big plus group. I mean, and they were bordering on being the mafia about how much they tried to shove that down anybody's throat who would listen. But this time around, they're taking the stance where we will give our customers whatever they want.
But they're not going to do a combo drive. That's the provision in the deal.
That's insane,
John.
Well, at least for now.
Serenity is on HD DVD.
Yeah, it is. Oh. I have that one.
Beautiful. Serenity or Firefly?
Serenity. It's a movie.
Yeah. See, Apollo I like the show better than the movie. I thought. I mean, the movie's
Serenity,
great. But...
Serenity, Apollo 13, Bourne Supremacy, Fifth Element, Phantom of the Opera, Doom, U571.
Doom.
Yeah, Doom.
Who's gonna buy Doom?
Doom. I know.
An HD DVD.
Yeah, so, you know, interesting selection.
But on a big TV, I got to say, side by side, I mean, I'm talking if you have a 50 inches or bigger and 1080p and you're on that cutting edge, you will appreciate the quality. The quality is fantastic, but the selection's not there. Hardware's a little iffy.
Okay, can we talk about my MacBook again?
Yeah, we got to get back to where Leo's been spending the money.
I do want to ask Nick, because one of the complaints about the MacBook Pro, and apparently it's going to be a similar complaint about the MacBook, is that these things run really hot, and it seems to be pretty well agreed that Apple misapplied the thermal grease. Have you seen this, Nick?
Will?
Why do I call you Nick?
Who the hell's Nick? Hang up.
Poor Nick.
Jessica Simpson fan.
I had a dream.
I'm going back and I'm editing this whole podcast and taking out the Nicks. Will, have you heard that story?
Yeah, it looked really interesting. I mean, it was sort of like apparently taking them apart to actually
it's
check.
It's just not on our list of stories. Where'd
you
get this?
I'm just throwing this one out because I got a MacBook and I'm worried it's going to be hot.
Why did you buy it?
I don't know. Because I lost, you know, I couldn't help it.
The first thing I think of when you talk about all this heat problem is that's got to mean that it's sucking the battery dry too. So
well, apparently it's getting very good battery life. But these are hot chips. I mean, they're
apparently it's got better battery life than the MacBook Pro. Apparently it does like 5 or 6 hours rather than 3 or 4.
Right. Good.
But I think if the MacBook Pro has had the sort of teething issues with the thermal paste, you've got to imagine that Apple's seen those for the MacBook.
I hope so.
There's
a guy on Something Awful who's actually opened the thing up, swabbed away the thermal grease with alcohol, and reapplied it. And it literally brought the temperature down like 15 degrees centigrade. A huge amount.
Well, Leo, if we hear of a major house fire in your area, we'll know there's a problem.
It's my HD DVD player. It's running too hot. All right, John. I won't mention that because it's not on the list. John is like the list police.
Yes, because last week you were throwing these stories out at us. They're not on our famous list.
Well, I just think
that's okay.
They come to me.
That's a good story. I never would have thought about the thermal grease being a problem. That's pretty funny.
Apparently, they're being cheesy. They're being cheap with the thermal grease, and they're not telling them to apply enough.
Well, who's they? I mean,
Apple's instructions.
China.
I know. I was really surprised when I looked at my FedEx slip. It's from Shenzhou, China. It's being shipped.
Yeah, from one of those big factories. It's probably, they make a Toshiba one minute, a Dell the next, and here comes your Apple.
And then they go, oh, quick, hold off on the thermal paste. And by the way, you got any black flake paint? Oh, dear.
Did you already buy the MacBook Pro?
Yeah. No, I didn't buy a Pro. I bought a regular cheap one.
Okay.
The MacBook, not the Pro. I've been waiting because I didn't want to buy the Pro. It was too big. I wanted a little one.
Okay, so you didn't go first gen. So, hopefully the heating issues are taken care of.
People already have them say they're pretty hot.
Well, what about the new Yahoo homepage that doesn't work in Safari? So it won't work on your new MacBook.
Damn.
It doesn't work on Safari?
No, it works on Firefox.
You just get a big fat sign saying, your browser is not supported. Please use IE or Yahoo.
What is Yahoo Firefox thinking? Although Safari is a problem, I think. It's just
No, that's not true. In fact, Safari is one of two browsers that support the CSS ACID test. I mean, it's... Firefox can't do it. Safari can. It's actually very compatible.
I hear more people complaining about WordPress blogs not being readable on...
Well, now that's ridiculous. If you can't read a WordPress Safari blog, which is about as vanilla as you can get, I mean, it's not like it's got any special technology.
The trouble is sometimes the IE requires so many dirty hacks to get CSS to work that it kills everything else.
That's right.
It's one of the problems that we find constantly designing websites, which is that the amount of stuff you have to do to get IE to work just breaks everything else.
So I'm going to my Yahoo. What's the difference? It doesn't look that...
It's shorter. The page is shorter. But interestingly, there's still no there's no Flickr on the front page. There's no Delicious on the front page.
No, they're not using any of these things that they bought.
They're not using any of these things they've spent millions of dollars on. It's just exactly the same my Yahoo, my chat.
I look at this Yahoo thing, and it's starting to look like the old MSN.
It does.
Page. I mean, they all look the same, but they're cramped. They got all kinds of crap. They're just hoping to God you click on something.
Click an ad before you leave in disgust. Please click an ad or two. There's so many ads. I mean, it's just outrageous. I'm just so sick of them. Well,
it's unbelievable to me.
Yeah,
I think it's ugly.
Yahoo now has a tech channel. Did you see that? They're doing a video tech channel.
Oh, it's the worst.
With Robin Raskin, as she's the tech mom. It's awful.
Oh,
it's just It's just a big ad.
Yeah, it's a total ad.
I wonder if people are fooled by that.
I really wonder why people watch this stuff.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, we are the last podcast still in the top 25 on iTunes, so it's clearly somebody likes what we do. God only knows why.
That's because we're
cranky?
Cranky?
What do you mean? No,
wait, your text is my...
Sorry, you already own Cranky.
I got Cranky.
I'm suing! I was cranky before you were cranky.
What do you mean it's the last podcast on iTunes?
On the top 25. Last tech podcast in the top 25.
Oh, last tech podcast.
Yeah, they're all falling off the boat. Yeah. They can't keep up.
Well, no,
so
because
it's mainstream.
I don't think they're as good as ours. That's the reason.
I think it's mainstream. It's all gone mainstream.
In a way, it would have made sense that early adopters would have been more
techies. That's right.
Exactly. And then, now everybody else is doing podcasts.
Right.
So
it makes sense.
Did you see that...
MTV is launching a Microsoft music service called MTV Urge. When you get the urge to download, I suppose.
Yeah,
but
interestingly,
they're doing both subscription models like Napster, and they're also doing download like paper download like iTunes.
I think it's going to have the same result as most urges, and let me just use the word.
Does anybody have
Crapper
Does anybody have a hope of beating iTunes at this point?
Not until somebody releases a system that's not just a piece of software, a system that is a hardware thing and a an operating system and a music player and a transcoder and all those things that Apple.
Well, Microsoft's trying to do that. I mean, if anybody could do it, it'd be Microsoft. But it's not.
Yeah, nobody else is going to do it. Creative's not going to beat them. Creative only they just sell players. They're still stuck with Microsoft software.
So is that the key? Is that why iTunes is so successful? Because it's an OS, it's hardware, and it's the software.
Absolutely. It's just top to bottom. It's simple. You've got no worries.
What if somebody releases something that doesn't have DRM? Wait a minute, that's all of
MP3. They'll never get the content.
That's all of MP3.
Well, that's all of MP3.
Yeah, yeah. Which, by the way, is not down. I mean, it's not gone.
And is apparently more popular than ever based on all the publicity surrounding its downtime.
People thought it was good, it was, you know, hounded out of existence, but in fact, they just had server problems. Wow. Well, there's a good example. Is it beating iTunes, all of MP3?
It might be too niche to beat iTunes. BitTorrent is certainly beating iTunes.
Right. But commercial guy. I mean, MTV. And boy, I mean, if anybody, you'd think MTV, because of their association with music, has some shot at it. But it just doesn't seem to me anybody's going to leave iTunes.
Yeah, but people who watch MTV are not the people who are on their computers. They're sitting around the TV stoned. You know, watching MTV, this thing sounds like a flop waiting to happen.
Yeah, it strikes me the same way.
Well, they unveiled it actually back at CES, and I thought, well, this speaks volumes about it. They had Justin Timberlake out to rap with Bill Gates
and
on the stage.
Isn't he hip? Isn't he with
And
it?
So you just thought, well, the combination of Bill Gates and Justin Timberlake is not going to sell this service to me.
No, they're going to, you know, if they had done some sort of a deal with MySpace, you'd have something, but, you know, they...
Yeah.
And that's where all the music is.
Well, MySpace is selling downloads of stuff now. Did you see that?
No.
Oh, sorry. Well, it's not on the list, but they're selling...
now, wait a minute. John's going to yell at you.
Hey, wait a minute.
MySpace is now selling episodes of 24 for $1.99. Ago, and of course, 24 is owned by Fox, and Fox is owned by News Corp, and MySpace is owned by News Corp. So it's all a bit of a
there's the juggernaut. There's the one you should be worried about if you're Apple is Fox.
Yeah, I agree with that. Probably.
Yeah,
I agree. There's something that thing can be leveraged.
That's a synergy. You've got MySpace. You've got all this content.
You got Fox.
Yeah.
But there was an article recently. there's an article in Playboy of all places about MySpace this month.
You know, I read it for the pictures, so I missed that.
Which was, I read it for the stories, Leo.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
But they were saying that MySpace is now becoming like so totally like last year, and that all the teens that thought MySpace were hip are now like heading off somewhere else because it's becoming too like
Not
News Corp
so.
Is commercializing it
Not
too much.
So I don't think that's true your friends are there. You know, nobody likes AOL, but they don't leave because that's where their address is. That's where all their friends
are. But how long before something new and cooler with more of an indie vibe starts up? And
no, you know, I think
all your friends away.
Friendster.
I think it's a generational thing. I think the next generation will go to the next thing.
Yeah,
and I think,
exactly.
Look, you get stuck in the old model. I mean, people are still on LiveJournal, but they're older.
Right. No, I think that's exactly right, because you stick with your cohort, and it's so hard to get all your friends to move to something new that they're going to keep using it. Look at a good example of this is instant message clients. We're here in the States. We use AOL. In Canada, it's MSN. I'm sure in Britain, it's MSN.
Yeah.
And you're MSN not going to change because that's where all your friends are.
Well, you know, one good example of that more recently for people our age is when they started these kind of quasi-social business networking systems like LinkedIn and that one that Google finally invented. There's still a bunch of these being formed, but I get invites to all these new ones. And I say, look, I've already joined three of these things. They're turkeys.
Right.
I'm done.
Do you use LinkedIn?
I maintain an account on LinkedIn, and once in a while I still get it. You know, somebody still wants me to put them on their list, but I mean I don't actively use it, but I check in once.
I don't either, but I continually get invites from LinkedIn, so it seems to be that's the one that at least, you know, grown-ups are using. Friendster's gone. In fact, I talked to a friend who worked at Friendster, and he said that all of Friendster's business is in the Far East. That they've been discovered there, and that makes sense. You know, it's new thing there. Yeah. Yeah. So do these social sites have a future, or is there another MySpace waiting in the wings? I mean, there's Tag World. There's a lot of clones of MySpace.
Yeah, I think they'll be increasingly around
and
like
just
topic areas and also and like, you know, not necessarily topic areas, but you know, franchises and stuff, like, you know, when the next version of, you know, Pokemon launches or something, there'll be like a sort of Pokemon social network. That's the kind of way that I see it going, I think.
Any other stories anybody has on tip of mind, whether or not they're on the list?
God, let's hope. Now, look what time it is.
Oh, you want to go? You're done?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm just saying. I
Let's
think
wrap it up.
Probably...
We've only it's about an hour long show, believe it or not. It
we've got the rootkit in the poker software, surely.
Oh yeah, you want to talk about that?
I don't really know much about it.
Does anybody know anything about it?
I know about it. It's the problem is that this poker company that makes software for poker players, online poker players, hired a guy they claim who was a bad actor, and he inserted a rootkit. The company's called CheckRaise. The software is a rakeback calculator that you use to keep track of commissions that the poker sites are taking from you. Inside the rakeback calculator, a rootkit and a Trojan. I actually thought this was quite clever. The way the Trojan works, it captures your passwords, sends them along to the bad guy, but then the bad guy logs in with your account and plays badly, losing to his confederates, to shills, who take all the money and then they split it later.
Wow, that's great.
Isn't that smart? It's hard for the it's hard for you to defend because that was your account. You were playing. You just had a bad night.
And it's like, amazing. No, it wasn't me. It wasn't me.
Yes, it was. It was your password. In any event, there is CheckRaise admits that this happened, and they have a manual fix, and it starts with deleting their rakeback calculator. But I don't think this is the last of these.
I'm always amazed by the creativity of some of these people.
Isn't that clever? It's a lot of work, though. I mean, they have to actually play and lose.
I mean, the only way to prevent something like that from happening to your own business is to hire somebody even smarter or as smart as the programmer to go over everything they did.
That's a good point.
Maintain proper documentation. If you're kind of on the low end of it, and you're basically just hiring a programmer who says yes to you.
Trust him. Yeah.
Yeah. You're leaving yourself open.
Programmers have done this for years. They've put back doors. They've put, I mean, a lot of people put time bombs in the code so that if you don't get paid or, you know, you don't get paid a support contract, the program stops working. It's not at all unusual.
I can't believe we've missed this one, guys. Dell is shipping AMD.
For servers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's astonishing.
Previously an Intel only operation, like forever. And now they're saying that they're going to do servers with AMD and
Does that merely prove that Intel doesn't have the clout it used to have, or that Dell is?
No, you know, I think Intel's always had this great relationship with Dell, but I think at some point the Dell guy said, "Look, if you guys can't catch up, we can't produce servers that are like second rate."
Yeah.
Ironically, the new Intel server chip Woodcrest, which is looking spectacular, is shipping like out next month. Hmm. And so they've picked like the month before Intel is just about possibly to get the performance crown back to switch to AMD. It's like the worst time ever.
They can switch back quick enough.
Yeah, it's what
the
customers want.
You'll find that they'll switch right back if they can.
So it's not the end of the line for the AMD and or Intel and Dell. They're still in bed.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's still a way to go there.
With the new Intel chips, they're actually quite competitive.
Yeah. Oh, they're definitely competitive. We saw in our labs last week, one of the new Core Duo chips, you know, that's in like the MacBook, and we put it on a desktop board and clocked it up to the same speed as the top end AMD processor, and it really whooped it.
Yeah, I think they're pretty
good.
It was
majorly fast.
Yeah. Thank goodness. I hear they're very hot, but we'll find out tomorrow when I sit on my laptop.
So FedEx is delivering this to you, huh?
Yeah, from Shenzhou, China tomorrow, and I've decided to take the entire day off and just. Use my laptop to fry
just
bacon.
Just I'd spend bond. The day shopping around, Leo, instead for like an asbestos pad or something you put on your lap.
A cozy.
That's a whole new, we got a whole new market, you know, laptop asbestos pads. It could be very
good.
Well,
did you see Apple actually has a support page now for the bottom of my laptop gets too hot?
Great.
They published this thing that was saying, you know, the bottom of your MacBook Pro may get too hot. Do not use it on your lap for extended periods.
Oh, great. I'm starting to regret this already.
Use it on a table is one of their
That's their advice?
Ones. It's like, wow. That's
all right. I don't want to have any more children anyway. All right, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know who the lady is, but Nick, I want to thank you for being here.
Nick. Thanks, Nick.
I know a guy named Nick from the UK. That's why. I realize that's why. And I apologize, yeah, sure. Will, for calling you Nick for the entire show.
That's
Will Harris
right
from BitTech, bit-tech.net. And by the way, a great place to go to read about all of this stuff. And really, I think that my new favorite enthusiast site. Dvorak.org/blog is the place to go to see what madness John C. Dvorak's up to. And, of course, Cranky Geeks. Is it crankygeeks.com or crankygeeks.tv?
Yeah, crankygeeks.com and PCMag.com and MarketWatch.com.
And all that stuff.com.
John, can you get Cranky Geeks in Flash now?
Yes.
I think so.
Press click here to start video, and it plays for you. It's remarkable. Of course, DLTV is the home for Robert Herron, and he's already done the HD reviews on DLTV, and I'm sure there'll be more to go. DL.TV. Patrick Norton is also there with Robert. And give our regards to Patrick.
Definitely.
And finally, Steve Gibson, of course, my good buddy, co-host of the Security Now podcast, which is just going great guns.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Really, really appreciate it. John, thank you. Steve, Nick, Will, and Robert. Another twit is in the can.
All right. I should have paid attention. I don't know what I'm going to do. Too much work. The problem is, there's no limit. My server's completely collapsed. So here's the deal. I'm just trying to get the thing up, but I have a hell of a time. What blue screens? Like, forget it. I'm killing you.
Round the horn. Twit, baby.